welcome to the Delling Pod with James Delling Pod. And I know I always say I'm excited about this week's special guest, but I'm just about as excited as I've been, Jennifer. And I'm not saying that just to flatter you, but we've been trying to get this together for ages, haven't we? We've just like I think I finally found my match. I'm pretty flaky. I'm pretty disorganized, and. And we did this thing where we kept sending each other Telegram messages, and I'd send you one, you'd send me one saying we must do this podcast soon, and then about 3 days later I'd go, yeah, we totally must, let's do something now, and then about 5 days later you'd say, yeah, we ought to do this. Has been going on for months and months, hasn't it?
I know. It's funny because it's almost, you know, I'm following your work and your podcasts and every one of my channels, you know, finally last week they said, when are you talking to James?
Good.
And I thought, okay, guys, I got this. I'll get this done. Because it wasn't that because when you know someone's on your level, like, of, you know, the frequency of what you're speaking and is speaking, you're like, go fight the good fight and we'll connect when we connect. That's kind of how I saw
it. No.
You know,
I knew it was going to happen. And I was thinking that you might have been thinking at one point that I didn't want to talk to you or something, which is like totally not the case. No, really, really good. But we ought to, I mean, does everyone know who you are, Jennifer? Do we need to explain the background? Because I don't want to be prurient, but at the same time, we've got to talk about Boris, haven't we? I mean, you know, because you and I both know him or knew him. We thought we knew him, and he's turned into this thing, this creature. And I'm interested to know what your theories are. But yeah, first of all, you're Jennifer Arcuri, and you're in Florida at the moment, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Land of the free. I want to be in England, but I can't, now that I'm a mom, I have to do things differently.
You presumably want to be in the England that no longer exists. I mean, I think we'd all love to be in England if it was as it used to be, but it ain't.
Absolutely.
Just tell me, make me envious. How free is Florida? Is there any nonsense at all there? Any COVID nonsense, or is it all?
I mean, look, you're always going to have, you know, people that are physicians or, you know, that believe that they're doing the best thing. There were a few vaccine centers. One went up for a second and came down literally the next day. I mean, there are people that do wear masks. I mean, my 4-year-old daughter will tell you those are the losers. I mean, those are the people that are fearful.
You have trained her well.
And I have taught her to stand in her own conviction that educated, intelligent women do not wear face diapers over their face.
Yeah.
That's not what, and so she, and now there are teachers at her school that do wear them. So I've had to teach her to be respectful and mindful. But I am extremely proud that even my 4-year-old can recognize when we go in the store, how disorienting it is to see a bunch of, you know, face mask people. It comes in waves. It's interesting. It comes in waves and goes away, right? You can tell when the media is ramping up the fear campaign because suddenly the signs come out. And anyone with good common sense knows that that's just the way, you know, the signs. They've asked me if I've had a mask and I've said no, and I've walked out. What was really interesting was Louisville, Kentucky, when I was there, because I considered that a red state or a more freedom-loving state, but Louisville itself was grotesquely, I mean, I was so bad, I had to leave. And I lost my father this year, so I wanted to be close to my mom and my family, but I was not gonna stand in a city that thought it was okay to send kids to school with masks on. And so we had a trilingual school in California that's now gone full mask, it's gone to hell, which is so unfortunate.
Yeah.
So we, you know, and I loved that school, and we were planning to come back to England. We couldn't. So I found another trilingual school here in Florida on the Panhandle. It is, you know, all the things you love most. It is like a homeschool that where people are taught to pray before eating. They stand, they say the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, which such a silly thing, but it's like, it's, there's accountability. And I love, you know, when I said no more sanitizers, they dropped it. I said, do not hold that gun before my child.
Oh, that's good. That infrared. They actually listened to the parents. That's really
I'll tell
good.
You something. When I came down to do a recce of the school, and there was a huge cell tower across the way. When I got to the school, I asked I said, do you know what frequency that is? Do we have any idea of what that is emitting? She was on the phone within seconds to find out. And we got it was safe enough for the children, but I loved it. It spoke a lot about the integrity of that school. And so that's when I knew I would be in safe hands coming down here.
Oh, well,
and I'll
you.
Tell you, I gave an example last week. We did a spiritual call because my group on Telegram they're very, you know, they're needy, but needy in a way because their minds are so awakened. They want knowledge, and they're constantly feeling like they need to plug in with other like-minded individuals. So we started these weekly calls, and last week we just owned it. I said, guys, we got to talk about the spiritual stuff. You know, we've been running opt-in threads or opt-out threads. Remember I told you we were going to do a, you know, some kind of PDF or to teach people to opt out. But I realized, you know, we can opt out all day long, but if we don't understand what we're up against, how are we ever going to defeat
this? Well, yes.
So I gave a story on my call where I was feeling really panicked. I had to go into Enterprise because some numpty hit me and I have to repair my car. And I was losing patience because obviously last Friday, you know, everybody's on edge. We're waiting for something to happen, especially here. There's just an energy. Yeah. And I said, guys, I need a car. I need to get my daughter and we have to get home. This is Friday. We don't. And I came back and the whole office started talking about President Trump and the insurrection and the theory of devolution. And and I was like, you guys know about what's going on? And they said, hell yeah, we do. And I was, this is so refreshing. From the guy at the petrol station to T-Mobile to Enterprise, I have had more conversations about the deep state and the criminal, you know, treason going on in the country. It is what's kept my spirit going. And so I have felt this very strong calling and obligation to speak out because I've become this bizarre name in the UK for all wrong reasons. And so, you know, when I reached out to you after I saw your call with Charlie Ward, and you called me like Bojo's like main squeeze, and I just laughed.
Did I?
Thinking like
I'd forgotten, Jennifer, how full on you are. I mean, you don't need much encouragement to talk, do you? I remember our first phone conversation. I think it lasted about 2 hours, and I don't think I got a word in edgeways. But look,
I'm so sorry.
No, don't apologize for being you. I think you're great. What I wanted to ask you there is go back. How you came on the map in the UK. You were Boris's girlfriend for a period, weren't you? I mean, I'm really not interested in this stuff, but at the same time, I feel that I ought to put you in context. You know, it's otherwise, you know, why are we doing this? I mean, you're great and you're interesting, but yeah, let's get some background first. So, what were you doing in England anyway when you met Boris?
So I was a film student in Los Angeles, and I had as part of, you know, IFTA and a few other independent film sales and acquisition companies that came over to the Marché de Film in Cannes, the Festival de Cannes. Yeah. And I had been going every year. I had met some crazy Indian directors who said, do you want to come to London? And I thought, yeah, let's do it. So I came to London and did this amazing experience. I mean, everyone should make a Bollywood film in their lifetime. It was so much fun. And I had fantastic Indian food and learned Hindi phrases and got to pole dance in Twickenham. I mean, there were all these adventures that one at 20 something, I mean, I was 21, 23. I mean, it was just a whirlwind. So I loved London. So you didn't need to invite me back. I was coming. And I had an opportunity to join the MBA, you know, because it was a way to get a visa. It was the easiest way to come over as a student. And it was egregiously expensive. And I had already gone to all the, you know, expensive schools in Los Angeles. I mean, from Columbia to University of Southern California to University of Wisconsin-Madison. I mean, pretentious schools I've done. And as you know all about. So I wasn't necessarily coming to London for more education, but the MBA program gave me a scholarship. And they said, we want you here. We need more women. We love your energy. Well, day two of that program, I went to my student services and I said, look, I am not MBA material. Like, I don't care about being a financial planner. I'm never going to be a consultant. I'm not going to wear a suit. I'm the wrong girl. So they said, well, if you like film financing, which was about the only thing I had to offer, they said, well, go check out the British Venture Capital Association. And on the way out, I was Googling BCA, called them up and said, you know, I'm the president of a club that didn't even exist. Can you give me a discount to come to your event? And so that's how I ended up going to the event. I went straight up and met Boris. Now, on this spiritual thing, when I met him, it was like a kinesthetic response where, you know, I haven't really described it, but it was like, have you ever met somebody and you thought, I know you, we've known each other before. Where have you been? It's a good thing I found you, let's go. And that's kind of how I felt when I met him from day one. It was like our energies had already known each other and I knew how to speak to him in a way that most people didn't. And I didn't recognize what that power was. Obviously, I was still a student, but that's how I got on the radar. And I, you know, I pursued forthright since.
Yeah, no, I can sort of look. The two ways of looking at it there's the kind of the spiritual one or the supernatural one, where he is genuinely your soulmate. Or there is just the simple sort of real world explanation that it was just kind of sexual attraction. But whatever, I mean, something happened.
I wouldn't say that it was a soulmate thing, and I wouldn't go as far as that. As much as, you know, considering I was in a brand new world of financial suits and, you know, venture capital, all these. The fact that I had met and gotten on so well with this one person,
yeah.
And then 6 months later, when I found him again, we just had the same kind of chemistry, this, you know, like a lot of things in common. And it was kind of bizarre. You know, why would I have had so much in common or so much to talk about? Now, yeah. Sure, you could say the logical, sexual, sure. And that, yeah. I can completely understand.
What did you talk to him about? Go ahead. What were your shared interests?
Literature at the beginning. Yeah. Short, I mean, novellas, what, you know, and Shakespeare, obviously. And those kind of things. And I was he thought I was very interesting in the way that I kind of spun, you know, some of the political issues. You know, he found it fascinating. And, you know, the way I would talk about startups and entrepreneurship and tech and how tech could be a sector that could really lead to drive innovation in the public. You know, who wants the government making the next iPhone? No one. You know, you want your private sector to be creating innovation and, you know, pulling solutions. And so that was in the very incipient stage of Tech City at the time.
Yeah.
That was a lot of our conversations at the very beginning. And he was fascinated with my obsession with London. I mean, even as an MBA student, I remember my colleague saying, why are you so obsessed with saving London? And I remember feeling like if we don't save London, and they were like, London's fine. And I don't know why. I look back thinking, was that, you know, some kind of calling, you know, the need to be in London during that time, those pivotal moments to be able to meet who I met and saw who I, you know, to run my events in the heart of that establishment. I don't
also,
know.
Also, you're the perfect person to explain to me, what is it that women find so attractive about Boris? Because, you know, I knew him at Oxford, and I can see he's, sure. He's good looking in a kind of rumpled way. He's good at sport. He's eloquent. He's funny. And I can see also there's a side to him that I very much warm to, and my wife did as well. I remember at the Spectator party, just there was a period where he was angling to be the next Conservative Party leader, and he'd had some terrible knockback. I think it was when he was Foreign Secretary, and he had this really sad little boy loss quality that made you want to kind of look after him. And you know, he was very vulnerable and sweet, and you wanted to care for him. I think people who don't know, who've never encountered him personally, don't realize that he does have this. There's attractive qualities, doesn't he? But tell me what you find attractive, what women like about him.
I found that what I was most endeared to was his, and this sounds so silly to say, how genuine he was. I mean,
lol.
I know, like, I'm struggling to say that out loud. I get it. But it's like, I was dating half of London, like every Tory trust fund tough, like every, and they, you know, sorry, Jen, I'm so maxed out. You know, you'd get all these, and then I had this one man who was busier than all of them, and still his you know, he would go out of his way to remember things about me, or to show me that he was paying attention, or that he was really genuine, you know, because he said, look, Jennifer, I like you a lot. You know, you'd get very, he's like, oh, no, don't play with me here. And I could tell from day one, I'm like, this man actually likes me, and he likes me enough that if he was just sexually attracted, as you know so many are, they would eventually lose interest and move on. Because I mean, listen, I was young and loving English men, and, sure. And I dated a lot of different, but he was the one that just kept.
I mean, look, with hindsight, you must have known that he was a tremendous player, a tremendous swordsman. I mean, Boris is just been pulling birds since, you know, he was about 14, very successfully, I understand. He does seem to have this gift, but you must have known about that.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, you maybe remember, I was fresh off the boat from Los Angeles. I mean, men wielding their power to entertain or impress young women was, you know, what I did day in and day out there. Yeah. So when I came over, I was like, look, there is nothing you can do or say. I mean, there's nothing interesting about a married politician. There's nothing interesting about a buffoon that goes around just regurgitating what he's told on stage. And he said, all right, Jennifer, you're right. You have me figured out. You know, here I am on groveling before you. You know, and he'd have this way of making me laugh. But here's also what I loved. Yeah. I could make him laugh. Like that guttural laugh where he, you know, and he would just lose himself. And to me, that was such a, you know, so it made me, I loved it. Because when you saw a man that was always so professional and had to do and be, and, you know, and then when you could just disarm him and he became a human being in front of you, it becomes the most, you know, human. So it didn't matter what he looked like. It didn't matter about his, it was in that moment. There was a genuine connection, and the connection didn't go away. Right. If anything, he kept pursuing me. And it was that pursuit that after a while I was like, you know what? I actually like this guy. I mean, we can talk, we engage. He's very intellectually stimulating. He'll listen to me ramble on about politics and finance and half the crap he doesn't even understand, you know, especially when it came to tech and security. Like, you know, he's not Jennifer. Listen to me. Are you the one doing the hacking? Like he would always, what does this mean? Seed investment. What is all this? You know, and I'd have to, and I loved it.
Although,
you're doing.
He does have this thing he does where he pretends to be more stupid than he is, doesn't he?
Well, he likes to, you know, it's an endearing quality because of what he does is he lets you he lets you in. Now, it's very easy to get caught up in that, okay? And I think one of the things that is very important for me in telling this story is at no point did I lose my luster or become starry-eyed or, become weak. I knew how to handle this man because of my background and where I came from. I also knew that there was very much a real person there, despite all that was said. I wasn't interested in all of that because what I loved was that here I was a student building a business in this brand new city and had the interests and audience of the most powerful man in the city at the time, in the height of his career. And all he wanted to do was ask me what I thought.
Oh yeah, point of detail, was he the mayor at the time, or was this after he was mayor?
Yes. This was during his mayoral term.
Which was probably, wouldn't you say, looking at analysing his career, that was probably his peak, wasn't it? Maybe the peak was when he went to the Olympics and he was more powerful than the Prime Minister at that particular event. He was just like a world figure. And he was...
James, no other proves that Hyde Park, when he, the whole crowd, Boris, he comes down, he's like, we're going to bring home more, bronze, golden medal. Yeah. And then you had David Cameron came out and everyone booed. And I thought, is that what happens when you become prime minister? Because Boris is not going to take well to that. I mean, anybody who knows him, here's the thing about him. When he cares about you, he will stop at nothing at all to gain your approval. He cannot stand when you are upset with him. So it is a weakness trait of his, because when wielded, it will exploit him and ultimately be his demise. It will be his undoing, because that is the weakness of this man. And I saw it. Now, I genuinely cared about him for many, many years, and I know he did, but I knew that that was not going to be a man that I was going to make a life with. He was never going to be the father of my children.
Yeah.
We were at two different stages in our lives also. Remember, I got invited in to all the intimate places of the life that no one sees. I saw, I was in that house. I knew about the South, I was invited to the country, like I saw that, and I saw the ghost of a family that once was, another woman and her children and a man who was ready to be a dad 30 years ago and their life together. And that's the moment I knew this was never going to be the man that I would ever want to, don't leave your wife. This is not what I want, at all. And I remember thinking, what am I doing here? That selfie I took was for me to remember the face. Like, what kind of woman are you going to be, Jennifer? Because this is not who you are. And that was the moment I knew that this wasn't something that was going to be forever.
So what I want to know, because I mean, I don't want the whole podcast to be about, I don't want to be too prurient, but I'm really interested in, you and I were both very fond of Boris, and we thought he was a good egg. Generally, I mean, obviously he had his faults, but look at him now, look at what he's become. I mean, you must have thought long and hard about what it is that's happened to him. Has he been nobbled? Has he been, or were we perhaps dupes all along? Because I think, look, there are two theories on Boris for us, for those of us down the rabbit hole. One is that the kind of sheep farm podcast view, is it Sheep Farm? The boys from Yorkshire, which is that Boris was another of those kind of actors that are groomed from a very early age to become part of this elite system and to treat us like cattle and to rule the world. There's the other theory, which is that no, things don't quite work like that. That he was bumbling along and he became prime minister, and then maybe it was during when he got sick with COVID, something weird happened to him, like the cabal had a word, and that was the point where he completely lost it. What's your theory on this?
Hmm. So I'm going to say my theory, but I'm going to have to be very guarded. And reason being, James, is there is a tide turning in the press right now. There's some stories that are coming out this weekend and into next week.
I'm liking your portentous tone already. Tell me, vouchsafe this information.
Yeah, they're coming. And it's really hard for me because, I want to just scream it from the hilltops because it's so important to me that people understand the man that we are mourning. You know, I come to bury Caesar, not to praise him. I mean, he's gone. He's gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, I loved him too. Like most people, I cared a lot about this man.
Yeah.
And
so what's happened?
It was very, very hard for me to understand how this happened. Even at the beginning, my own husband was like, look, he always had your back, he'll call you, don't worry, this is just theatrics of politics. And then as time went on and we saw this election in the US, I mean, talk about blatant fraud. You know there was research that, and I was starting to hear maybe Boris wasn't exactly on the good side, that actually there were things that happened. And then if we rewind the clock and look at the timeline of things, that's when I started waking up to maybe this actually isn't the man that I knew at all, that something has changed. And I had been told about a year or so ago during the election stuff, a senior Tory backbencher reached out and apologized for what had happened in the media. And he apologized for everything that had said. And he said, there's a reason why I've never moved up in the ladder. And I said, well, do explain, because what's happening to my friend? And he said, dark things happen. And what happens is they come to you, they, I don't know exactly the specifics, so forgive me for if I misspeak, but more or less it was, there is an offer given where you are promised, the Brexit, the peerage of the Lords, the notoriety. And then when you take this oath or you proceed forward in this ascension of what is the prime ministerial status, even when you know, or by the time you figure out what's going on or how it really works, it's too late.
You mean
now
you,
I had had,
you make the deal with the devil, you make the pact with the devil, essentially. Yeah.
It's presented as, like, and there are old vaults. I've seen them myself. They're like big books, the size of like for a giant to read, or they're like really big, and they're old, like symbolism and rituals. And we have been taught and trained that a lot of this stuff is ancient and done, but no, it is modernized into a lot of the stuff that is. And anybody that's worked in Hollywood or worked on a film set will tell you there are certain or even the theater, there are superstitions you do not, you never say the Scottish play in a theater. Hello. No. There's certain things on the SNL set. So there are things in these very ritualized, traditional, old establishment buildings and covenants and codes and oaths that if you are chosen and you proceed forward, you have to surrender a certain bit of it. And at first you feel so chosen, you agree.
Yes.
I think the switch out happened before he went in for COVID.
Right. Do you think it happened before he won that, the 2019 election?
I believe it's part and parcel of when the party chooses you, there's some kind of initiation process. And,
right.
I don't want to misspeak, but I also don't want to hold back or feel it. But yeah, there was, and the way that row happened, the row where the police were called out from the flat.
Oh, yes. The row with Carrie, yeah.
That was leaked on professional equipment from her best friend. I mean, there's so many questions around their relationship and how that went down. And, I'm probably over-speaking here, but
I don't think you are over-speaking. Just explain what's going on.
People knew in the party that was a shit shack. That was never going to go anywhere. And then suddenly, she's going to Downing Street. Suddenly she's meeting the Queen. Suddenly she has to, they're getting mixed. Suddenly she has, she's pregnant and has a baby. I mean, the whole timeline is.
So it's the equivalent of a shotgun wedding in a way.
I mean, people know this girl has got more skeletons in her than a graveyard. And people, and I knew, you know, when I first found out about them dating, I actually, awesome, good, you know, oh, look, that's cute. You're trying to replace me. Okay, good luck. You know, like I was happy and I thought, you know, that's how he is more about, but then when I found out more about what was going on and how this woman was just, and the whole, you know, and I'm not blaming her. He's a big man too. But again, it goes back to this weakness of character, this flawed, you know, he would have done anything to gain the buy-in. I asked him once, do you really want to be a prime minister?
Yeah.
Is that you? Or is that what they say of you? And he looked at me and then he kind of shrugged his gentle, well, you know, I'm an incredibly competitive person. And I said, yeah, but are you? Or would you much rather sit here with me, drink wine and read Shakespeare?
Yeah.
Because I have a feeling you love the parties, you love the show, you love everything. And, you know, the part of me, no point in my, you know, really, did I ever sit there going, oh, this is a man that I want to build a life with? No. A father he did not want to start over and do. A family he was never going to, I mean, he was not so beyond that at the point when I knew him. And to say, you know, he had a career a clear line. But I think he wrestled with that. And, you know, James, there's something else that I have to say, because he always mentioned it. And it's in my diaries, like all of them, because I always recorded every conversation I had with him. A little Marilyn Monroe in me, I learned from the best. But anyway, she said, he said to me quite often, it all goes, you know, it's all going swimmingly well until the Chinese get involved, you know, that kind of thing. Or the Chinese, you know, seek to conquer all. And he used to tell me about a woman who, in this story that he would constantly say about a woman who entered the London tech and political scene and could wield her power by her wit and her charm and her beauty and would never succumb to any of the bad men in her life because she would always rise above it. Isn't it interesting? He would say these things. And then he said at the end, the one politician she falls madly in love with, it all goes perfectly well until the Chinese get involved. And I just thought, who are the Chinese? His ex-wife, the Labour Party, the press. And then I'm thinking, no, there's something to this. You know, now looking back. And he would love to speak in these, you know, great antidotes and allegory, because that's the way he spoke. So I delighted in the lush language of, you know, that's one other reason the way he would speak, you know, always. And just like you, James, one of the things I love most about you is the way you speak, this beautiful grasp of the words, especially when you write and when you tell stories. It's fascinating.
That's very kind. Obviously totally deserved, but I'm not saying that, but so because you mentioned this to me, you mentioned that a senior Tory party figure had said to you that in Westminster you can't throw a dart without hitting somebody who's working for the CCP or in the pay of the CCP. And is that what Boris meant? He was literally talking about that the Chinese Communist Party has so bought up Westminster and the deep state that the tenor, would you say?
I mean, he had made allegations to that. I was actually more involved with the Tory party than the press have, you know, alleged. I mean, I knew very many, Sir Francis Maude. I mean, there were so many that, you know, from all the politicians at the Tory, you know, that were at Business Day. And I went to a Business Day dinner where the donors at the time were having a go at Osborne and Company because they had flat out sold the nation to China. That all the resources Britain owned were gone. And I just remember being so delusionally, you know, like drinking the tech Kool-Aid, trying to argue with, oh no, look at all the great things they're doing.
Yeah.
I said, don't kid yourself, girl.
Right. So. Right. Well, yes. So look, there are at least two theories about what's going on in the world right now. One is it's all China, that you know, they grew this bug in the lab, and they unleashed it on the West deliberately to destroy the Western economies and to take over the world. And then there's the other theory, which is that this is really the elites. This is the kind of the 13 families and the people who really won the Illuminati or whatever. What's your take on that? What's going on? I mean, the UK at the moment, is it China? Is it Illuminati, or is it both?
I think it's both.
Yeah.
And everybody that needs a linear timeline, you know, like especially in my Telegram group, I am constantly reminding everyone that a lot of this stuff is just coming into fruition. I mean, Sure, there are ancient books and texts, but there's no book that's yet to be written that, you know, provides that timeline or the exact detail of factual information. I mean, literally everything. You know, there's a lot that we can corroborate with facts, but there's a lot that we just, and so you have to start looking to people you know, listening to their stories, understanding, you know, that there might just actually be something bigger here. And so now I fervently believe this is humanity's great wake-up call. And do I think that Boris went into this, you know, to try to, you know, I don't know exactly how it happens. I don't know. You know, was there some blackmail involved? And then there was a complicit. But I mean, the guy is bad news. I mean, I was told this last year and I didn't believe it. I mean, straight up, the treason stuff with the foreign intelligence meddling into the United States through the Trump election, the foreign, the surveillance, the unlawful surveillance on not only the United States, but the UK. There is a PowerPoint. There is a factual documented PowerPoint of this surveillance. And Boris is part of that.
He's responsible let me just get this straight. He was foreign secretary at the time when the intelligence services were being used to spy on Trump. And there must have been, he must have had some knowledge of that, probably.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is shocking, because you would have thought that Trump and Boris would be natural allies. And
maybe they were, but again, the forces to which Boris would have sought buy-in or backing would not have been on the same team as
some of the things he said. Some of the things he said have been in his speeches have been frankly weird, and they sound like somebody in a hostage video giving signals. I mean, because as we know, Boris cannot help being flippant even in the most serious moments. And for example, He's made references to the Tower of Babel, which we know is one of the preoccupations of the powers that be. He's also made reference to goat sacrifices and things like that. It's weird stuff he's put in there, sort of inappropriate mm-hmm. stuff. Yet he's trying to tell us something, isn't he? I don't know what.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I've asked my group, we've run a few different, I mean, I've even asked Gareth Eich to ask his dad. I mean, I am trying to understand more around the concept of possession. You know, a neurological possession, is this a demonic possession? Is it, because it's not just the leaders with whom I'm questioning the power of possession, but also the people, because there are so many people that don't see. And then so many of us that see this for exactly what it is. And we don't need the constant, you know, where's the link? Where's the evidence?
I'm sick of this one. People on our side playing this game like, hello, we're talking about people who've been hiding this stuff for generations and selling us false history in our history books. You expect what? That it's going to be peer reviewed and there's going to be lots of printed documents telling you, giving you the facts that you want to hear. Just give me a break. But yeah, did you get any impression of who are these people that that he deals with, that pull the strings behind the scenes? Are they people we know? Are they politicians? Are they civil servants? Is it the guy in charge of the cabinet office? Who are these people?
I think there's a lot of questions we need to ask about Lord Moloch Brown.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, I mean, he's closely associated with Satan's envoy, Tony Blair. I mean, definitely Mallett Brown. But was Mallett Brown, did he have influence in the...
We need to talk about the tabulating of votes in Whitehall for the vote leave, Mr. Brown.
That's a good point.
We need to talk about it.
Tell me about that. You mentioned
about
that.
About the Anna system. Yeah.
Just give me a TLDR on that one.
I mean, there's various theories on this. I'm constantly dismissed by every journalist, so it's hard to figure out what exactly happened. But there is an Anna system, which is some kind of Dominion Smartmatic, you know, rigged thing. Every Brit I spoke to who's involved, you know, I've been there. I've leafleted and campaigned. I know how the votes are counted, guys. I get it. What happens is after they're hand counted, they are tabulated. This is where we get the big data analytics. And wherever this big data analytics, which happens to curiously be at Whitehall, in this guy's office that keeps coming back through the whispers of back channels. And yet none of us seem to ask the right questions. I want to ask, I mean, there's so many questions around, well, yeah, so the vote leave, something happened there. Something, you know, and the way that I was told Boris got the, you know, the Brexit done was when he finally went over to Brussels, where they were laughing in his face, like, who's this buffoon on, you know, when he came over and he said, look, if you don't give us the Brexit, you know, which is really code word for globalist operation, we will release the real numbers of the election, which was a landslide leave, like 70% leave. We're not talking 48, 52 or whatever the public numbers were given. We're talking massive get the hell out. And if that was ever to come out to the public, to the Brussels officials, what would Spain, Italy, Greece, I mean, everybody else would want to get the hell out.
Right.
The EU is a pile of corruption. I
hate to do what I've just condemned, but tell me what evidence you have for this, that the vote leave vote was much, much bigger than we were ever told, that it wasn't 48, 52%, but it was miles more.
The same Tory backbenchers, the same people I speak to still to this day, and I can't give their names over.
No.
But I still have strong connections within the parties.
And you're saying that did we have Dominion machines at the time in the...
I don't want to misspeak. Look, I don't know exactly how the leave vote happened. The theory that I was told was that it was a landslide leave, and that the way that he, you know, what was understood that when he went to Brussels, the reality was it was such a landslide. Now, Anna system is the system that is used in the UK. There is plenty of documentation. I've circulated it on my channel before. The Anna system is some offshoot of this Smartmatic Dominion tabulating kind of, you know, cluster of companies that does. Now, again, no one sat there and said, look, Jen, here's all, but I mean, I trust the people with whom keep repeating this kind of stuff than I do anybody in office. And when I speak to the lawyer who's telling me about the Anna system, and, you know, it is openly known there is a system. And for whatever reason, Lord Moloch's name keeps coming back.
Okay.
The same creepy creepers.
So just supposing you're right, that Brexit was actually a landslide, and that there are MPs in the Commons that know this stuff, how is it that this stuff hasn't got out? I mean, why are these backbench MPs so invested in the system that they will not speak out of something of such mendacity and corruption on such an epic scale? You know, one of the most important votes a lot of people felt, the vote that divided the country, our chance for to have autonomy outside the European superstate. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd have thought that this would be a story that they had to get out. They couldn't keep secret. So why are they keeping it secret?
I mean, the man that made his career on independence has never enslaved the country more. And why isn't that just being looked at it alone?
Yeah.
You know, the fact that we were all so excited to get Brexit done. Did anyone say, what the hell does that actually mean?
Yeah, actually, that's a very good point. Let's talk in normie terms a moment, because a lot of people aren't down the rabbit hole and don't get it. But sure, given how we all felt, I remember how I felt on Brexit morning when we got the vote. You know, I had to go to Glastonbury that day, and I woke up early, and I was expecting Brexit. I was about to say us. I didn't give a shit about Brexit anymore because I think it was all a con. But at the time, I felt that we'd won a glorious victory, and I was so excited. And I thought, finally, Britain can do all the things. Britain can be great again. It can have it can have a low tax economy. It can do all sorts of things, like having free ports and stuff. You can have sort of, you know, Hong Kong in the northeast and so on. You can do amazing things. You can deregulate. It was going to be great, wasn't it? And yet, instead, we've actually got more eco-fascist, more regulated, more less free of speech than we were in the darkest days of our membership of the EU. So what the hell is going on?
I didn't really have an opinion on the EU. I remember saying, this is you guys deciding, I'll just be here. I went to the polo that day thinking, like, of course they're not going to leave. They're just, you know, because the tech world was very pro-EU. So yeah. I didn't really get a chance to even think what it would mean to leave the EU. Yeah. But I've always thought about this, too, since then. I mean, how can people not see this? I mean, even if you are stuck in the 3D world, the fact that you voted in a guy that was meant to deliver freedom, and yet you've never been more enslaved. And to use the guise of unprecedented times, like this virus was some novel, I mean, this is just so blown out of proportion. And so I really struggle with how people are still, their allegiance to Boris still to this day, when I'm thinking, you know, you guys, even if you didn't understand the bigger picture of what was going on, surely on some level, you know, this isn't right. This isn't the guy you voted for. Well, this is not what.
Okay, let's go a bit further down the rabbit hole here, because I know that the plandemic has been years in the making. They had various dress rehearsal pandemics, so that when this one started, they were all ready to roll with all manner of things, you know, just everything from the signs in the petrol station urging us to celebrate the NHS to all these shops suddenly decided, we can't take cash anymore because cash will kill you, kind of thing. And people bought this. And the idea that the only solution to this problem would be vaccines. You know, where did that come from? Well, we of course know where it came from, but it seemed, because it was these stupidities were introduced incrementally. We thought it was an organic process, just the government responding to the changing crisis, and it wasn't at all. Where am I going with this? We know that this was all planned. Do you think that the whole Brexit thing was part of that plan? Do you think that Boris was always meant to be the person to help facilitate this plan, or what? How does it work?
I mean, I guess, I wish I knew. I mean, there's, because those are a lot of questions I knew, or I wish I keep asking. You know, I wonder if you were to refuse the offer that you're given from day one, is that it? You know, is that, or are you forced to go forward? Do you know you're the stooge on stage that will be disposed of once your role is fulfilled? Because that is exactly what's going to happen to Boris. The tide is turning, and he must have at some point recognized he was in far over his head. The other thing I was told that I forgot to mention about the Tory backbencher was that they said specifically, they cut out everyone in your life. So anyone that has any kind of emotional, so James, this explains a lot, you and I knowing these people, you know, calling them friends at some point in our lives going, what the hell happened to you? They force you to cut. So it's family, sex, and like the immediate incarnate needs that they allow around. But anybody that has any kind of emotional connection to you, they cut out. And even the children, I've heard there has been, you know, and I'm not, I don't, I'm refraining to speak from what I know extensively is going on with the family, because it's not my place to talk about their family. But I will say there's so much they don't speak. I mean, it's a nasty, toxic world. And so you think, well, when this happened, it wasn't just me he cut out. He cut out everyone, you know, all past lovers, all, pole dancing model friends of his, and all of his, you know, friends from growing up in journalism and school. And so it wasn't just me. And what was really fascinating, James, like you, I consider a friend, like these other friends that were his friends that we've kind of connected over the last year going, what the hell happened?
Yeah.
So I don't know exactly the process, and I don't want to, I mean, of course I have an opinion, but I refrain from trying to make us both a target here, in that until we know exactly how this happens, I just know, you know, I highlighted a bit about when the party kind of came to that V shape, you know, Jeremy Hunt and what happens then, because something happens from point A to point B. When you take that and you go up and you become that stage for, and this notion around the 6,000 years of the Kabbalah, like that stuff, it is, there's so much there that it is easy to just turn it off as nonsense and debunk it, because it's quieter on the mind. It doesn't hurt
It would be much, it would be so much nicer to believe that the world was simply about, you know, there are these two main parties and one is on the left and one is on the right. And if you're a conservative, you vote for the right wing one. And if you're a socialist or a Labour, you vote for the one with the red rosette. Right. And it's not manipulated from above and they represent our views. I'd love to believe that stuff, but I think that the last 18, 19, 20 months have been a complete eye-opener for a lot of us. I mean, some people have known about this for much longer than we have.
James, do you remember that speech he made, speaking of like the weird things he's saying? What was that whole like, I really believe the UK doesn't have any corruption? I mean, talk about deflection. What an idiotic thing to say. Why bring it up?
Well, again, it's the hostage video, isn't it? It's Macbeth, isn't it? I am in blood stepped in so far that should I wade no more? I'm sure that Shakespeare knew whereof he spoke. He'd seen all this stuff. He'd see, because this stuff isn't new. This has been going on for generations. And I think that once you make the pact with the devil at the crossroads, you get all the good shit that you get everything. They open the doors for you, but you pay a terrible cosmic price for your decision. And it's what we're seeing now. I mean, it's like Dr. Faustus. I actually use that phrase on another cabinet member who used to be a friend of mine, but no more. And I see it. I see they've made that pact with the devil. They get all the things that Faustus gets, but at the end, they get dragged off screaming by the demons to hell. I mean, that's where we're going, isn't it?
Yeah, there was a great clip I posted as a thread where I think it was from Out of Shadows, where the guy is saying, look, if it was a bunch of losers in robes out in the woods chanting, and, you know, no one would give, they'd go, wow, look at the losers. But because it's the guys who own everything in, you know, out there before a base of an owl doing these weird ritual things, the guys that own the banks, the media, the politicians, you can't help but go, what the hell is going on? Why are we dancing around this? Come on, guys. Yeah. Look at this. And so now I feel like Tim Price does this beautifully on Twitter. I mean, we need to start gaslighting the hell out of these guys. I mean, enough's enough. Take your loser Luciferian practice elsewhere, because we're done with it. And I think when people wake up, you can't unsee what we're talking about. The problem I'm having is that how do we get everybody to see this? So is it really this process that we're going through now, where it's drip, drip, drip? I mean, you had President Fake of Biden call a guy the N-word the other day, and the media did nothing. I mean, what? what kind of clown show are we living in?
I tell you what kind of a clown show. It is It, the clown. It's that really evil clown clown thing from that movie. What's he called? He's not called It, is he? What's his name? Pennywise.
It's It.
It's Pennywise, the clown. Yeah, that's what it is. And don't sail your little paper boat down the gutter in the street, down the drain, because he'll drag you under. Sorry, I'm going to change the subject here, but not really. I'm going to sort of segue into a thing you wanted to talk about. Tell me about your Oprah pictures that you discovered.
Well, I mean, I posted a tweet just to see if people could see the symbolism in that one photo. I mean, you have two fallen angels under an ark, which the ark is a symbol of a portal, with some kind of transhuman man with breasts, weird ass creepy statue in the center, and the contrast of this white, it says Satan all over it. And there's pictures on Wikipedia that shows these medieval 16th or whatever century picture of Satan. I was going to send it to you, but then we got on the call.
Yeah.
I mean, just stuff like this, I'm starting to bring attention. You know, we got to talk about like Travis Scott. I mean, shame on Travis Scott, the most disgusting concert of the century. Right. Did you hear about this?
Yeah, I was absolutely It haunted me for days afterwards, because I could see that there was something very wrong. I mean, eight kids do not die of heart attacks at the same event. I imagine that they will try and spread the story that I don't know. What would kill eight kids? Maybe there was a sort of the equivalent of bad acid at Woodstock. You know, there's some kind of rogue drug, but it's clearly not that, is it? I mean, it was clearly, well, what do we, I mean, I'd never heard of Travis Scott before, but I started reading up about him, and he seems to be very heavily involved with some post MK Ultra program called Monarch. You know, all the stuff about butterflies, all the stuff about programming people. I mean, I think, you know, I don't know enough about it, but people should look into this. He's not an honest player. He's not just an ordinary kind of rap star who just got unlucky at his gig. He seems to revel in this stuff. And I mean, you had to enter the mouth of hell, didn't you, to get to his... This is the thing. People, our entire culture has been encouraged in the last 100 years or so to embrace the secular. You know, we live in a sort of post-Freud age where religion is considered something that is a kind of... A throwback to a more superstitious era when people were more ignorant, and of course this stuff isn't real, of course it's a nonsense, and they very successfully secularized and sort of rationalized our culture so that we don't accept that this stuff is real. But meanwhile, you have the elites, you have the people in the entertainment industry all paying homage to this stuff, which of course doesn't work. Yeah, right. I mean, they believe in it, even if you don't, you know, if you, the public, don't.
Right. Absolutely, James. 100%. And this is the biggest flaw in the theory. I mean, everyone, so Catherine Austin Fitz says to watch movies if you want to understand. And I'm so, you know, but then the movies kind of brainwash you to believing that's just what happens in the movies. And I'm thinking, guys, this is right in front of us.
I tell you what,
in all kind of manifestations.
If I had a penny for every TV drama or movie I've seen where people wear the stag's horn, you know, and a mask, or on black and white tiled floors, and all rituals are just kind of embedded in the consciousness of the public, whether they're aware of it or not. This is satanic symbolism, which is being programmed,
glorified. Yeah, I mean, I mean, I did have there are a few friends that have told me that right before Boris became prime minister, he was asking a lot of questions around Christianity and really trying to grasp religion So it makes me wonder, because I think when you get to a point of ascension of, you know, into this establishment, there is this air of entitlement where you believe that you are chosen to, you know, receive all the knowledge of the world, and that you're part of this now secret society who is better than the average man. And it's interesting, you know, they don't teach us prayer and meditation or the understanding of the power, like the power of the human consciousness or the pineal gland. And I believe that's on purpose to keep people from not grasping the power that we have as a conscious being. And so much fear, once you take that oath and enter that space, is about keeping your position and doing whatever it takes to keep those of us who might be on to you down. And so that's what we're seeing play out. When everybody asks me for proof, I'm, you know, look at what's going on around you. No one's written the book or, you know, sent you the link yet. You have to think with this and this. And be, yeah, you know, and recognize that the fight we are having is beyond any politician. It's not about left or right. No. I mean, I can't speak for all the world leaders. And I've said this on my group many times. I can't, but I can speak about the man I knew, because there was a real human there.
Yes.
But he's not there now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is. It's a case of we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. This stuff was written about, you know, two millennia ago.
Yeah.
And just under two millennia ago. And it's real. And it's, you know, the scene I keep banging on about this, the key scene in the Bible where the devil takes Jesus to a high place and offers him, you know, shows him the world. This scenario is played out everywhere, every day, in the big banks, in the law firms, in the universities, and perhaps in the movie industry, and perhaps above all in politics. You can have it all. You can have your seat at the table. You can go into the room where it's happened, and you can feel like a big swinging dick, and you can, you know, you get everything. And all you've got to do, nothing really, just got to sell your soul. That's the deal. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. you can talk about it metaphorically. You don't need to believe in the religious element at all. You don't need to believe in the mm-hmm. devil. You can,
right.
It works just as well. Well, you're just missing mm-hmm. that key dimension. But yeah, you can understand it. And yet people still think, and I used to think, that politicians are basically honest brokers and that they go into it. Well, maybe they do go in it to make the world a better place, but it's after a time. Yeah.
When you speak, I mean, again, I remember having conversations with him about these people, you know, about Thatcher and what's her name? Oh my goodness. The woman that Theresa May, sorry. Totally. Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, Theresa May, George Osborne. And I said, do you really want this to be this? He goes, look at my competition. I said, ugh, they're both terrible. Yeah. You know, making a joke about Osborne and May. And not that I really had any opinion, but I just said, if you're going to be a leader, don't suck. All right. Just don't. And he started laughing. I said, whatever you do, if you go in, you know, don't become these guys. He's like, you're right. I shall never become these guys. You know, they're all terrible. You know, I just started doing these kind of
things. Yeah.
And then I think back and I'm like, dude, you became that which you hated. What happened? What happens to you? I've had some very bizarre dreams through this process. And I really do believe that whatever has happened to him, and as insane as this sounds, I might as well just own it and say it. I don't think his spirit is still in the same. I don't think that is him at all. And like I said, I don't know enough about possession. I don't know how this all works, but everything in my being is screaming.
I suspect that doesn't apply just to him. I suspect you can point to Trudeau, Merkel, Scott Morrison. I think Bolsonaro is a good guy. But most of them, they're all the same. They've all got the same problem.
And a lot of, you know, I guess just because I am here in America, you know, I have a different, I'm getting a different energy and, you know, I'm here privy to things on the ground that maybe wouldn't make their way to England. For example, whenever I hear people start going on the Q, like Q is nonsense, Q is blah, 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 I get really, you know, someone hasn't explained this properly to you, because if you're still of the notion that there is not a high level military operation, because there absolutely is, going on, and you still believe that Biden is actually because everybody on the ground here knows that's not the case. There is something going to happen. It's triggered by events, not dates. So as expiring as it is to get exhausted by the fact that nothing's happened yet, because it is very annoying to constantly, you know, is there going to be an EBS? Are we going to have a, you know, cyber pandemic? Is there a lava explosion and a tsunami hits? Are we, you know, is the act of God going to take out Buckingham Palace? I mean, what the hell's coming next, right? Whatever it is, there is a kinesthetic feeling of humanity that something is coming, something big. And I really do believe that of what's happening here on the ground of this, you know, this transition and restoration of the constitutional republic, there's too much here for me to dismiss it. Now people say, where's the proof? Well, the proof is my spirit of conviction. It's watching what's happening on the illegal mandates happen. You know, the way that the laws, the way that the audit is playing out, the way that the Project Veritas forced handover of evidence. You know, all of this is set up for humanity to wake up as a whole, not a few of us, but all of us, that whole where we go one, we go all thing. So this is really, as painful as it is this slow demolition. And I know that people get weary of the Q psyop, but Q, whatever you think of it, did its job. It did bring people into the notion that maybe, just maybe, the government that which we think we've elected is not actually the same operating government to which is actually calling the shots. And the great lie that has been told our entire lives is this notion of the Ponzi scheme within the central banks. You know, DC, City of London, Vatican. There is a central network of elite, you know, coercion between these two center points that, you know, has so many questions that people have just kind of looked over, that now on the precipice of this humanity wake up call, it only makes sense that we start looking at, you know, breaking down this network, which is what's happening. Sorry if I went on a tangent there.
I'm agnostic on this issue. You know, do you ever listen to Cliff High? His podcast.
Of course.
Yeah.
With you too.
Okay.
And there's certain things I don't agree with him on, but yeah, I love him.
Yeah. So he calls it the SOC, doesn't he? The self-organizing collective. And I think on the balance of probability, it's likely that there is some kind of high level resistance, because people have been, particularly anyone probably above the rank of lieutenant colonel, and anyone who's worked in certain branches of the CIA or the US military or whatever, must be aware of this stuff, and therefore will have, there will be resistance. You know, it would make no sense not. I mean, I would have thought, if nothing else, the kind of people who commit to going to serve their country, join the military and risk their lives, tend to be patriots, tend to be, you know, and tend to be pro-human. So I don't think that there is going to be no hope. At the same time, I think that it's probably a mistake to put our faith in these people, because...
Oh, for sure. I'm not an occultist in that I believe that, you know, like this notion of stand back, watch the show. I hate that. In fact, I've never said that. that this is all pantomime and we just need to relax, that the good guys have control over it all. Because whoever says that misses the point completely. This isn't about standing back. This is about waking the F up and standing up and taking back whatever you want to believe. If it's a sock, a Q, call it whatever the hell you want. I remember hearing about Q clearance 3.5 years ago now on a conversation when there was a phone call between cyber, you know, there was a few different cyber people on the phone call and they mentioned Q clearance. Why? The reason why it went like this to me was because I thought Q like C-U-E, what are they queuing? I thought Q for what? The Q clearance. I never thought of the letter L or Q. And then a few years later, I think it was like a few months later, actually, we were in RSA and we had won an award for security stuff for our training. And one of the guys that I had spoken to while we were waiting for the interview was saying, do you know what's going on? Do you have any idea what the Patriots are doing? And I thought, what? Trump's a good guy? Like, he starts going on about like brokering peace in the Korea. And I thought, how has this not made any news? What are you talking about? So it was kind of like a little dribble here and a little bit, and it was just a little bit like, and then once it kind of came into full force, and it started when the conspiracy of the scandal with me came out, and the way I was told, look, if you play by the rules, the story will go away in 2 days. Admit your weakness, fall on the sword, admit the affair, the story will go. And I was like, hell no, I'm not weak. I'm not admitting weakness. So when I didn't follow the rules, it got a lot worse. Right. And then as time went on, and in California, they had just passed AB 262, which was this weird law that said in the event of an infectious disease, the government has the right to come in and take your child, or, you know, in so many words. And of course, it was only the anti-vax yummy mummies of Southern California that were saying, hello, people, wake up. They're getting rid of medical mandates and now medical exemptions for vaccines. And now they're lawfully allowing you to enter their home. So all of this together, which was, you know, when I said, when they said 2 weeks flattening the curve in California, I was like, we got to get out of here. This place is going to go to hell. And you know, obviously I wanted to come back to England, but that's when England locked down. And so that was my kind of, and the firsthand experience of the election. And what I've noticed is it is very regional, because the people on the ground that are closest to what's going on, Florida, Texas, Southeastern America, they are the ones that are on the pulse of what's happening. And there's only a few handful of people that actually know what's going on. So there are so many questions, and that's just why the misinformation happens. Because you get a lot of people that hear it and then regurgitate it as if they're getting firsthand information. And it construes the whole thing. But on my life, there is something going on here. And America's not... We're building up to something.
Lots of people are going to say that you're just selling hopium here, but you have a feeling that there is something is happening.
100%. And I stand in my conviction here. So if I may, James, I want to make a point about conviction, because people are very scared to commit to standing in their truth. It's like they dip a toe in and back out, dip a toe in, because they want the buy-in to know that they're not the only ones who feel that way. Mm. And one of the biggest learning curves I've had on my journey this year is learning how to stand in my own conviction. So mock me as you will, call me whatever name you need to, and I understand people will not agree with me, but I stand resilient in what I'm speaking.
And we ought to talk about briefly about cryptos, because it's another of our shared interests. You're kind of, you like XRP, don't you? Is that your favorite one? Because you think
the only one that matters.
You think that Bitcoin is the bad guy's coin.
Well, Bitcoin's done. Bitcoin's owned by China. Hello, Evergrande. Look at the last few days with the payment for the surprise interest payment just so happened to come from some weird ass block, you know, Bitcoin wallet that hasn't been opened for 8 years. Oh, come on.
I don't know the story. Tell me what's the story.
We're watching a staged performance. This whole notion that Satoshi, this guy in some hoodie, wrote this white paper, or even a collective of guys. It was a CIA operation that came out right after the death of the dollar in 2008. And yes, I say the death, because we just band-aided over that. I mean, that's when we really screwed over the currency. There was no going back from that crash. So 2009, you had the advent of a decentralized digital currency, right? Perfect, perfect. Enter stage left, right? Bitcoin, everything that it screams that it was from day one, it is not. It is not a finite supply. You can fork the network through a protocol called consensus. It is not decentralized at all. In fact, it's so decentralized, China owns it. Mark my words. It is not going to ever be a scalable or digital gold, ever. It's not a store of value. It's a gamble. So enjoy it. And I tell everybody, have fun, right? But you're not going to get what you think you're going to get out of it, because it is dead, dark, dirty money. The whole thing around Bitcoin. And I've been mining it. I mean, my husband mined it when it was nothing, when you could literally boil an egg on the mines in your living room. I mean, we've had rigs in our house since I can remember. So I'm not speaking from a place of like, oh, I bought it on Coinbase. I know. No, okay. I've been rigging this from day one.
So you're all in on Ripple.
I'm all in on Ripple. I carry ISO coins. So I am taking a gamble right now with Shibu Go meme coins. I mean, we're just having some fun through this cycle. I think XLM is going to 100x. XDC is also a big one that's going to pop.
Hang on, I'm going to write these down XLM.
XLM will 100x this season or this bull cycle. And that's what we're planning, the charts. You want HBAR? HBAR and XRP?
Okay.
XDC is the trade finance. So this blockchain is where you're going to do your trade finance. XLM is your peer-to-peer payments. XRP is your institutional establishment money. And you never sell this, dear James. You buy it and you hold it.
What? XRP?
Mm-hmm. You sell the other stuff.
Where are you on? I'm quite liking Wonderland. Do you know about Wonderland?
No. What are we talking about now?
I don't know. It's a thing. It's a crypto thing. It's a coming thing.
Oh, okay.
yeah.
Well, let me tell you, the whole thing, when we flip, the dollar will die. There'll be some kind of period of exchange where they, you know, you'll be able to turn in your cash. I believe, and again, this goes against the herd here, I don't care. We will have a cash system. It will be backed by gold. And the new system will run on Starlink satellites, quantum financial system, which Cliff doesn't believe happened or exists, but I respectfully, as much as I adore that man, do not. I do believe there is a quantum financial system that runs the satellite. That's just why XRP can work offline. The documentation is there across the Federal Reserve website. The lawsuit with the SEC is complete puppetry. Complete puppetry. They've already settled this. This is going to be the coin. The coin. I've already seen documentation with the SEC Joint Committee where they have already established a protocol for a buyback. I know the managing firm. I know these people. These are not just faceless names on the internet that have made the offer to the buy, you know, to the SEC, saying, "Look, when you guys do buy back, this is the price point the XRP community is going to expect." Hear so us this is, now.
So you're saying is now a good buy-in time for XRP?
Oh yeah. Well, honey, 6 months ago when I told you, but yes.
Yeah, but maybe I've been profiting from other shit coins and things. You don't know.
Sure. And that's the gamble you can take. Look, I don't fall, but I get Ether, Bitcoin. Those are the cool ones that everybody hears about.
And so you reckon there is going to be cash still, and that it's going to be backed by gold.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I've seen
Well, that's
it.
Very bullish for gold, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. You should have been on my channel 6 months ago. We've been talking gold, silver, and crypto, because these are the things that your best hedge when the dollar or the pound collapses, that petrodollar. We will have a gold, and silver is going to be off the charts because of its industrial uses.
And when
if people don't have...
Go ahead. When do you think that this moment's going to happen, this transitional moment? How soon? We're any moment, weeks, months,
literally
years.
Any moment.
Do you really?
I mean, I wish I knew. That's the billion-dollar question. It cannot sustain. It cannot. The latest the lawsuit could go to would be March for February, March. But I mean, listen, everybody on the inside of this case knows it's already been settled. I mean, there's no doubt. There is no doubt with XRP. Zero. And the fact that we are going to revert to a gold, I mean, the patent protocol, the Interledger patent protocol, it goes back to 1988. So the ability to send money from point A to point B, these bank repositories backed by a hard asset. And they used examples like gold and oil, like hard commodities. But that's what we want. And what I want to explain to you that this is so exciting, James, central bank digital currency are something exciting, not something to fear. Now, look, the globalists, listen to me, listen. The globalists and their creepy web applications, okay, let them dangle it in front of the people. Like, oh, your biometrics, you're selling us your soul. If you don't do as we say, we're cutting off your payments. Yeah, let them say that all day long. It's not happening. It's not. By the time it gets to that, humanity will step up so much. We will demand not only the chains of the Ponzi scheme central bank system to be broken, but we will demand a hard equilibrium asset-backed real money supply. And when that happens, those creepy ass web applications go out the door. One thing I have to stress is the initiation or adoption of CBDCs does not equal creepy biometric use. Okay. Just like vaccine passports do not equal the stop of transmission. You don't need that. You don't need it. XRP can be used with a full utility and purpose of its adoption without any creepy biometric anything. And blockchain wallets are something that are going to be amazing, James. No more central bank bull crap. If you choose to do your management services with banks, there will be some available. But by the time this is over, we will be our own digital wallet that's secured and verified on a blockchain. Now imagine what happens when you work, let's say, a shift 9 to 5, and you get paid immediately for that shift. You are able to get paid because no one wants to, we take away the faff of the PR, the payroll twice a month, you know, that all that goes away. It's issued on smart contracts.
I get all the kind of the groovy theory of this, but this is the kind of optimistic case that people were making while unaware that the fact that the world is controlled by central banks and that the Federal Reserve is a criminal organization and that China wants to the world to be a giant social credit system. So how do you reconcile your optimistic, which I, you know, I, this is a possibility, I agree, but don't think that the people who've been raping us and, you know, treating us like Maasai cattle, like to suck our blood out every couple of days, they're not going to suddenly go, oh, well, let them be free.
Yeah, no, they won't. No, they won't. This is why we have to go through this horrible system. This is why we're doing this. This is why you see the SDR allocation, or like the printing to oblivion. I mean, people don't even understand the IMF. Like, this is highway robbery. They're printing money and giving it to the politicians. Hello. This is just, they don't have a product. They're just debasing everybody's currencies. So when we move out of the central bank system into this blockchain system, you're right. The globalists have an agenda. Of course, they're going to build their creepy ass apps. Let them think that that's what's going to happen. It won't. Humanity will step up and we will create a new system for this new tech age that we've built as a society, but using the 6,000 years of history for maintaining an equilibrium for what is real money. And no better is that better surfeited than that with gold and silver. And okay. I think palladium and platinum.
Okay, but call me Mr. Parade Rainer, if you will.
Sure.
I don't see how we... Given that you and I are in this minority position in the world, and given that, you know, I'm sure it's okay, Florida is mildly exceptional, but most countries around the world, people are just kind of going, I must listen to the government, I must do what they tell me. Mm-hmm. They're not thinking we must fight for our for our blockchain and our Ripple independent currency. They're going along with it, and they're thinking, well, as long as I keep my nose clean and my head down, maybe the bad gods will leave me alone. Well, that doesn't really fit in with your theory.
No. And you know, most people don't understand, like, when you're sending money inside a bank, I mean, it's a glorified messaging service that we use. It's an email protocol. It's so insecure on purpose. I mean, it's like the banking industry is just one lie after another. And it's, I've always been very, you know, I was always very supportive of it. I mean, what my business partner was arrested for LIBOR, you know, the rigging. I adored Tom when that happened. I couldn't understand how these currencies exchanging and all this would even, you know, how could this be fraud if this was legal? How did this happen? So that's what started me down the wormhole of understanding shadow operations, Vatican spire banking, how biz works, sovereign debt funds, you know, this bank of central banks, and ultimately how we've been living a lie since 1971 when they pulled us off the gold standard and, you know, pushed inflation into oblivion. And actually, from what I'm hearing is when we do revert back to that gold standard, everything reverts back. Your income, prices, you know, loaf of bread, houses, cars. So that's what that implosion back without the Ponzi scheme inflation will do to society. And I'm sorry, James, I'm not a macroeconomic, you know, to be able to explain that. I don't know how that will work, but that's what the theory is.
Yeah, well, look, I hope you're right. I think there are a few missing gaps in your theory.
Point them out to me because I want to find them. I want to fill them.
No, it's not that.
But I want to be able to do it later.
If you listen to Catherine Austin Fitz, which you do, what she tells us is that the purpose of the, you know, the pandemic and all the stuff that's has been in order to sort of freeze the world economy, pretty much, in order to stop what would otherwise have been an inevitable collapse, you know, absolute chaos. So that they're instead planning a kind of managed destruction of the a managed collapse of the financial system, which is, it's not an economy, it's a financial system, isn't it? And
she's right.
The financial system was always a massive con trick perpetrated by a tiny minority of central bankers against the people of the world. So I suppose my problem with your argument is, given that these people have been doing this stuff for generations, I mean, certainly since the creation of the Federal Reserve in, what was it, 1913. I don't know about the Bank of England. Given that they've been doing this, they're not suddenly going to go, well, it's time we instituted fairness in the world and people got, you know, their money backed by gold, and they're not going to do this. It's going to have to be very messy.
Well, they're not going to have a choice. Humanity will choose it. And per the executive orders from September 20, and I'm going to mess up the word, 139, whatever, 48, whichever, that when you are involved with crimes against humanity, or no, that's the wrong the executive order I'm talking about is trafficking, the illegal trafficking of humans and people, and all of these establishments will no longer have the assets. I mean, I can send you post after post of how many actors are selling their homes right now. We know, and you could just say, well, they know there's a collapse coming. Yeah, or they were forced to hand over their assets. So you're going to see these indictments.
Oh, are they? I didn't know. Tell me about this one. I hadn't heard this one. Actors selling their... Yeah, go on. Tell me. This is like...
Yeah, this is all over Hollywood.
Is
everybody
it?
Who's got a... front mansion. Yep. Sorry. See you later. Loser. They're all going. All of them. Don't listen to anybody. If you're not here, there's like little tiny helicopters coming down from the sky all over Santa Monica and Los Angeles. I mean, come on. They're arresting people in the middle of the night. So I get your theory, and Catherine, I adore her. And I understand why you think the way you think. But again, it goes back to this Great Awakening theory where all of these swamp rats, these people in control, who cares what they think? They're not winning and they're not gonna win. So let them huff and puff all day long. The people that are going to take over this, and when they decide, when they pull that plug, whenever this martial order, martial law, however this happens, I don't know, but it will happen.
Okay.
And those people in Los Angeles aren't just disappearing for fun. They're not fleeing the state.
But let me rewind you. I don't even know about this story. What actors are selling their houses?
Mm-hmm. Let me find some.
Yeah.
So it's been all over. They are selling. I'll send you the. So there's a lot of homes that are going up. So you also need to watch when people get divorced, you know, how they transfer assets between the couple. And you also need to watch when they start dumping their shares. So we obviously are watching the who's who of Hollywood who's listing their homes. And it's all over here. Look. So Kamala Sunset Strip, and here's Jerry Stiller. There's Kanye. There's Diddy listing his LA mansion. Here's Robert De Niro listing his West Village townhome. Oh, look at this. All the same pedo elite.
And they're selling, because I mean, one theory would be that California is now such a shithole that they're all getting out. But
oh, sure. And they all know there's a collapse coming. So, you know, even with the 3D eyes on, you can still rationalize this.
But
sure.
Hang on a second. I mean, if there's a crash coming, you'd want physical assets. I mean, property is a good thing to have in a crash, whereas fiat, not so much.
Which is why I say again, well, you're also selling at the height of the market, because once the market collapses, you won't see these prices again. And also, if you're forced to hand over because of a seizure or of an indictment or because of this executive order, that very much does still exist.
Right. But that's just a theory, isn't it?
No, not a theory. When it becomes public, I don't know. But their indictments are happening. People are being arrested left and right.
I so hope you're right. In fact, I almost think we ought to end on that happy note of, so, okay, I'm going to go and look for XLM, an HBAR, an XDC. You're going to check out Wonderland. Yes, check out Wonderland. Come on, it's got a name. It's got a good name.
All right, darling. I'll amuse you a bit.
Who would not want to own? If you've got Sheba in you, you can certainly have some Wonderland.
I'm trying to get, yeah, but I want all ISO coins because those are the only ones that will survive what's coming. So Shiba Inu is a quick trade for me.
What's an ISO coin?
Coins are where the XDC, XLM, XRP.
Okay.
Algo, those kinds. Okay. There is a certain accreditation that will be used in the new financial system.
Oh, I see. Yeah, you see, I'm showing my how shallow is my knowledge of the crypto industry here. Well, we could go on for hours, but I think I need a cup of tea. I need to go make a cup of tea now. And we can always do another one, can't we? I'm very glad we've had this. We've finally done this podcast. And may I remind my beloved listeners that freedom isn't free, and you can support me on Patreon and Subscribestar, and you can go to my website, dellingpoleworld.com. And you can, if my Bitcoin thing works, you can be Bitcoin. Nobody seems to do it because people complain that my Bitcoin thing is broken. But anyway, support me in these different ways. And thank you for listening. Is there anything you'd like to plug, or
just I hope that everybody gets the information that they can have an opportunity to survive and thrive in this, and not see this from a doomsday fear mongering point of view. That's my message, and that's my plug. If you feel fear or anxiety, go, you know, there are so many opportunities here to make this reset something wonderful on the other side, and I really do believe that. So I hope that's my plug that resonates with people.
I like your happy note. I'm going to end there. Thank you very much.
Thanks, James.